Welcome to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us. This is Deb.
Hi, this is Carol.
Today, we are talking with Karen Hutton. Karen is a woman of many talents. She's an international landscape and travel photographer, a speaker, a teacher, a voiceover professional, and a great storyteller. And that's just the short list. I was introduced to Karen by my wife, Deb Usilka, also a photographer. Deb attended a recent talk Karen gave titled The Year of Awe. And Deb Facebook messaged me right afterwards to say that Karen would make a fantastic interview. I took a look at Karen's website and was mesmerized by her photographs. Karen's work not only transports you there, but holds a sense of timelessness, as if everything stopped just for you to view it and to become part of the story. In preparing for this interview, I watched Karen's class, Finding Your Artistic Voice. This is a class for photographers. I am not one, but it was more than that. It's about passion, inspiration, and learning about self. And she taught me a little about how to look at art, I think. So let's just jump in. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. My goodness. What a wonderful intro. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you for joining us. We are thrilled to have you. So let's get right to it. What does awe mean to you?
Well, you know, awe is something that I'm really familiar with throughout my life, because I tend to get awestruck by life and nature, and I grew up with horses and they would fill me with awe every day. And so it's a thing that I've lived with all my life. But when it came time to start it, and then, you know, when I started, I photographed when I was younger, then there was a big gap. We can go into that another time. But then when I started back in again, you know, that awe, that sense of awe is what makes me want to photograph things. And I always try to translate that into my work. So what I'm trying to say is that it's something I was very familiar with. Then I was asked to explain what it is I do and to maybe start teaching people how to do that. And I'm like, how do you even do that? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it took me a while to kind of develop some language around beauty and inspiration and how you imprint you into your photography, which of course is just another way to live. It's not just about photography. It's about living a life through that lens, you know, living your life as if it were an art. Well, nowadays, I know this is a long-winded answer, but it's really interesting because now, cut to present time, now they're doing a great deal of research. They're actually quantifying it instead of it being, oh, Karen's this woo-woo thing. You know, what are you even talking about? What, you know, what setting do you use? And I'm like, the awe setting, fool. And then how do you explain that? So now it's wonderful because I've got this research to sort of, I mean, I don't personally feel like I need to validate it, but when you're trying to explain to non-believers or people who haven't thought of life and art and photography or really anything this way, it's nice to have something to point to and look, say, look, you don't have to believe me. Go over here and read some of this research that Dr. Keltner and Paul Piffner and Michelle Sciotta and some of these other people are doing at the major universities to quantify awe and what it does. You know, not just sort of like in awareness, because I'm getting to getting to the answer to your question, but awe is one of these things that transports you. It also affects almost every function in your body, and they're quantifying that now too. So to me, awe is one of these states. They're actually calling it the 11th emotion now, because depending on, you know, what psychological, psychology researcher you're talking to, they'll either say we have 8 basic emotions or 10, depending on how they're approaching it. Well, they call this the 11th, or I suppose it would be the 9th if they were an 8 emotion believer. Anyway, it's a state that transports you. It puts you in a, it shifts you into a whole other zone that is present. It fills you. It just stops time. Mm-hmm. It transports you into this elevated sense of you. There's something greater than you happening. Mm-hmm. And it puts you in a position where you no longer doubt yourself. It's like, oh my God. And for that moment, you're transported into a, like a more divine part of you, and it happens instantaneously. You don't have to do years of research or of personal development, although I did. it's an instantaneous shift, and it's caused by all kinds of things, from the smallest to the grandest.
Absolutely. You know, I often say that eating a raspberry can be awesome.
Right?
Because it still amazes me that something that little can taste like that.
And from right, and from my perspective, you put a macro lens on a camera and look at a raspberry, and it's like, holy cow.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's just unbelievably beautiful, and it's a sense of, you know, beauty and grandness. And I mean, it's almost like, you know, shucking into a spiritually divine state where you're like, okay, if my life meant nothing more than this moment, this was worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because you mentioned, you know, being woo. You're definitely among your people here, so you never have, you can never be too woo. But I as well, and I think a lot of our listeners, you know, nature is such a huge awe-inspiring thing. And I loved, I was looking at some of your photos, and one of the ones that spoke to me the most was the tree queen, because for me, trees and being around trees, that's like my church. That's what causes awe. I think, you know, Deb and I went to Muir Woods, 2017, and it was my first time there. And I, of course, I had seen pictures, but it just doesn't do it justice. Talk about being transported. It was amazing.
That's not just a forest. That's a redwood forest and redwood trees and the presence. It's, they have a presence.
Absolutely.
And it is like you're in church.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, you can feel it in your body. You can feel yourself calming down. You can feel every DNA strand just lighting up.
Exactly. Well, and there's, you know, I mean, if people want to, you know, any part of what we're talking about could be drilled down into more. And I'm actually just looking up, so I always forget his name. Here it is. Okay, so 2 books. One is called Forest Bathing by Dr. I think I'm going to say this wrong, probably. King Lee. So it's Dr. Q-U-I-N-G-L-I. Because there's a lot of people who've written, you know, the forest bathing idea. But this is the gentleman in Japan that wrote the original book. And the subtitle is How Trees Can Help You Find Health and Happiness.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. It's an incredible book. And a lot of people say, oh yeah, I know all about forest bathing, but did you read this book?
It sounds amazing. I can't wait to read it.
And the other one is called The Tree by John Fowles, F-O-W-L-E-S, who wrote The French Lieutenant's Woman and others. It's amazing. He writes it, of course, since he's a novelist, he writes it, and he's British, he uses language, right, to really bring it all home. So it's a little bit, you have to kind of take your time reading it, because just, you know, working the language, which isn't so slangy and so modern, right. But oh my goodness, brings the point home. Those 2 books and forests. Mm. Oh, if you're a forest person or a tree person, you just have to read those books.
I've written it down. It's now officially on my list.
You will freaking love it. It's amazing.
Trees are very important. That our logo is a tree. So that's very, very important to us.
Yep. Yeah. Agreed.
So changing gears a little bit, You've talked about the concept of cross-training. Can you explain to our listeners what you mean by that and why it's important?
Yeah. So when I was an athlete, because I was a figure skater and a dancer and trained horses and, you know, all that kind of thing, I was taught very early on the power of cross-training. Because let's say you run, all right, and you're a runner. And so you run. Running is very repetitive. Any sport is, but I'm saying running because it's a little more obvious how repetitive it is. So you get strong in a running way, but maybe you're getting weaker in flexibility. Mm-hmm. So you want to cross train. Maybe you do yoga, maybe you dance, maybe you do other things. I know way back in the day, this is going to really date me. And every time I say something dates me, I say, I'm dating myself. It was the best time I ever had. I knew what I liked. We went places I enjoyed. Anyway, was football. There was a famous football player named Lynn Swan, and he started taking ballet lessons.
I remember that.
Because it made him lighter on his feet, more flexible, more able to, you know, make these crazy leaps to catch the ball. I forget his position, but he had to, he was the one who catches, not a football. I just remember watching him and going, that's amazing, because I knew about cross training then. So basically you cross train to make whatever it is you're focusing most on stronger, because the thing you're focusing on the most, you get strong, but ultimately you get weaker because you're not balanced.
Right.
So I'm a huge believer in it because I've done that with everything I've ever done. So in figure skating, I danced and did stretch classes and did all kinds of things to, you know, be able to move the way I wanted to on the ice. In photography, just cut to now, I use everything I've ever done. I've used voice. You know, when I teach, I talk a lot about artistic voice, but I do voiceovers, and I coached voice to TV and radio news broadcasters for 25 years. As an actor, because I was an actor for many years, one of my most influential teachers said, you know, as an actor, you, your body, your voice, your, you know, the you-ness of you is all you have to bring to the party. You know, you don't have a bow and arrow. You don't have you don't have any peripherals. It's really just you. So you owe it to yourself to either get into therapy, to travel the world, to build a life of, you know, a world of experiences to bring to each part that you play and each, you know, role that you take on. So I feel the same way about photography, in that cross-training can be personal development so that you open your eyes to the world. It can be learning to ground and focus so that you're more in the zone and you have a way to, because the thing about photography, the photographers encounter is like they pick up their camera and they're like, oh my God, is this the right shot? Oh my God, am I composing it right? Oh my God, you know, there's just too much input. So to have a way even just to ground and focus so that you can be all in the zone and calm instead of your mind racing and full of doubt. Mm. Whatever it is, go to films and see how a great filmmaker sees, mm-hmm, and how they frame their story. Learn about storytelling. Learn about color and color grading, mm-hmm, and different ways of putting across your point, you know, because as a photographer, as an artist, as, you know, as a person, even telling a story about the day, are you going to sit and talk to yourself, or are you talking to other people that you want to engage?
Right.
Because if you are, what matters is, are they engaging? Are they engaging with whatever it is you're creating? So learning how to do that from different points of view that are outside of your discipline makes your discipline stronger.
Oh, I love that. And all your experiences are these building blocks which enrich your story.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Because as you said, all you have is you. And you
right.
are the sum of all of these things and all these experiences.
Right. And the thing is, you know, there's another wonderful, I mean, I think this relates pretty well to this point, which there's a video. You know who Seth Godin is?
Yeah.
Yep.
So Seth Godin did a talk for a group called Craft and Commerce. I'm trying to remember if Craft and Commerce are marketers or they're, you know, they're not artists per se. Consequently, this was a powerful talk that he gave to them in 2018. And the name, you can find it on YouTube all day, every day. Mm-hmm. It's fabulous. It's only 45 minutes and it's called Your Job is to Make Art. Hmm. And he explains the difference. He does, you know, talks about a lot of things, but one of the things he does so brilliantly is explains the difference between an artist and a copyist, what it means to be an artist and why we need to bring that, or why, you know, he's talking to this one group, but I mean, it doesn't matter if you do what the craft and commerce people do. You listen to it and you go, after you're done listening to Seth Godin, you're like, oh, I want to be an artist. I don't want to be a copyist.
Right.
And it's funny because, you know, in that talk, he's always drawing these great analogies. So he explains, you know, an artist does this and does this, you know, like creates original content and thinks outside the box. And he has this bell curve, you know, that he draws and, you know, you want to be an outlier and all this kind of thing. And why? And then if you're in the middle, you're a copyist. And then he says, which makes you a plumber. But my partner in retreats owns a little boutique hotel. Her name's Patty Baird, and the hotel is the Cedar House Sport Hotel in Truckee, California, which is fabulous. And she said, she saw it and she got it. I mean, she understood what the whole point was, but she said, she goes, I have a problem with the plumber analogy, she has said, because I happen to love plumbers. She goes, I depend on them, and sometimes they're very creative and they really think outside the box. And so we were just in Italy leading a retreat there, a photography retreat. And so I put it out to all of our members, you know, I had them all watch the video too. And I said, so let's come up with the photographer version of what Seth Godin means when he says plumber and copyist. What is like the worst thing we could think of for a photography analogy? And we came up with traffic cam.
Oh, there you go.
So we were like, do you want to be an artist or do you want to be a traffic cam? And we all went, ooh, ouch. Yeah, ouch. And so, you know, following the rules exactly, applying technique more than, you know, what you think about and feel about what you want to convey about something, the story you want to tell, makes you a traffic cam.
And no one wants to be a traffic cam.
Right?
Yeah, no.
That was funny. That was enjoyable coming up with that.
So you mentioned you just finished a retreat in Italy, and I know that you're leading another one called The Artist's Voice.
Yep.
Lake Tahoe this October. Can you share a little bit about the retreat as well as the importance of voice and how it relates to art?
Yes. So The Artist's Voice is what I really call all of them. That's like The Artist's Voice, colon, and then the location, because we do them all over the world and they're all focused a little bit differently. But the bottom line, sort of like the core piece of it, is finding your artistic voice in photography. And why it matters is there's an Italian poet, Dante Alighieri. He wrote Dante's Inferno. He lived, 1265 to 1321. So he's actually a 13th century poet, philosopher guy. His quote that I use in so many of the talks that I give, when kind of towards the end of a talk, when I've been talking about artist voice and why it matters, he said, beauty awakens the soul to act.
Wow.
And so if there were ever a time that we need to awaken our souls, to take action, to create, to bring something to this world, this insane world, it would be now.
Yes.
So yeah, that's what stands behind everything I do, including my retreats. So when I say The Artist's Voice, I take people through a process. So there's part of it that's the same wherever we go, because I teach people how to ground and focus, what this whole point of view of the artist's voice and why it matters and how we are trying to see from a different point of view than, does this make a good photo? Is it a good composition? What are the settings? Right? Because that takes a few seconds. But this notion of letting the world and the wild, right? The John Fowles in The Tree calls it the green man, you know, the wild, and Brené Brown talks about the wildness in us. And so we're out in wild nature. And the reason it moves us so much is it connects directly with the wild part of us that is very original and very unique. You know, not that we're more special than God, but we're all a piece of this divine expression, right? So connecting with that and conveying that and bringing that to everything you do is a bit of a trick, because we're not raised that way. So I've figured out over time, because I've done it in so many different disciplines, I figured out kind of the thread of what makes that happen in everything. And part of it can't be taught, but what I can do is lead people through a process that gives them an understanding of maybe where in the field to stand that gives you the most likelihood that that one cloud of inspiration, and I say cloud, it's a good cloud, it's a beautiful, bright, silvery cloud, can rain down on you, right? It's really all up to you. But that process then applied in each, you know, situation. So in Italy, it was Venice and the Dolomites. So it was had a both a cultural and an adventure component. Mm. So Tahoe this October has a bit of the adventure. It's not quite as, we're not climbing every mountain and, you know, Sound of Musicing on the top of our, the top of our, you know, mountaintop. It's a little bit, you know, I want to have it for all levels. So we're doing a little more culture and we're doing some of the beautiful scenes around Tahoe, but we're also doing some culture and some local artisan interests and photographing from all these different points of view and focusing on storytelling, focusing on the power of awe and bringing that in and seeing how that shifts everything when you do. So that when people walk away, they have a different idea about how to do that for themselves. Like, I think I'm successful as a teacher when I've given something that makes me obsolete. Now, it doesn't mean people will never come back. It just means that you don't need me to go and have a good time and create some amazing stuff.
Right.
We can come back together and go to a new location and have even more fun and build it even more, but it isn't like you need me to then go home and do it for yourself. I think that's an important distinction to make as a teacher, you know, because some teachers will build enough doubt into their system that they teach that students go, oh, I don't know if I can do this by myself. I better come back for more.
Right. It sounds like you really empower the students.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my goal. And you know, how empowered people get is individual, but that's always what I'm standing behind when I'm trying to do these things.
Yeah.
So that's really what the artist voice is about. And then every day we do something different and get amazing, beautiful, awe-inspiring photos along the way.
Oh, incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds absolutely fabulous. So Karen, you brought up the subject of the soul. So I wanted to ask, just to tell our listeners, maybe if you're okay with this, you know, you had a near-death experience in 2006. So, yep. So what effect did that have on you and your work?
Well, it was sort of a double whammy for me because my mother had problems with depression and was eventually, but she was a very positive person. It's kind of a strange dichotomy. One of the most positive influences in my life, actually, but yet she struggled with depression and later in life was actually on medication for it. Not like she was manic depressive or anything, but just to kind of help level her out. Well, you grow up with somebody like that and the best and the worst, you know, gets imprinted. And so I understood her concerns and what made her feel sort of depressed. And somehow, you know, I picked up on a lot of that stuff and that became me. So I spent a portion of, and plus I'm just different. and I didn't really feel like there was a place for me in the world. Hmm. So instead of feeling all celebratory about these differences and how the veil between where I came from and where I was in this physical world was very thin. As a youngster, I had visions and so on and so forth. And mostly nobody believed me or thought I was a little bit weird. And I don't know, maybe I was sensitive. Maybe I inherited my mom's, you know, kind of like caring too much about what other people think or what have you. But I was very depressed and kind of suicidal when I was 17. Wow. And there was really no help for it then because it was, there's something wrong with you and you had to deal with it yourself if you right. had those back in the day. And so, but I got through that, but it wasn't like, so in other words, I spent a fair amount of time kind of wondering if I should be dead. and I laugh and it's not laughable, but what happened was I got through it. I had finally eventually got some help and I got through it. And I was like, okay, thank God. I found my husband. He's the most amazing man. And I was like, oh my God, I've gone through all this pain and these bad relationships. And now this is awesome. And then I got a bone infection and almost died from it.
Oh.
And I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I was scared to death. I mean, not to death, luckily, but I was really scared. I was so sick that I was afraid I wasn't well enough to have the surgery. And if I didn't, I was going to die. I mean, I really seriously thought I was going to die. And I remember thinking, okay, this is just wrong. I mean, you got to see the humor in it too. I'm kind of laughing because it's not funny. And yet it is kind of funny because you're like, okay, I spent all this time in my life feeling suicidal and like I wasn't worth it. And like, oh my God, I just want to go back to my brethren, you know, in the stars. And I really hate it here. And what am I doing on this earth? And then I finally find a way to get through that. And then I actually get something that almost kills me.
Right.
After I've decided I'm good. I'm like, what the hell? What is that? So basically I got through that and did live, thank God. And God had a lot to do with that. And so what it shifted in me was it really, I had always done personal work because I always knew I wanted to be more than the sum of my conditioning. Mm. And I would be told repeatedly when I was young that, well, you know, you're just the sum of your conditioning. You're never going to be any different than that because, you know, you grow. And it's true. You grow up with certain things and it does shape how you see, but it doesn't have to form your every response to everything because this is a free will universe. And you can decide that you want to have a different kind of life. I approach photography the same way, which is why I use Photoshop. People say, oh, that photo is Photoshopped. And I'm like, duh. Hello. Do you know me at all? It's like, you know, I don't see just being, take what you are given, which is the best that your parents can do. They really do their best, and mine did their best. Thank God they were evolving people because some of the stuff that happened when I was young sucked, but they evolved and we all healed and that was great. So what am I going to do? Go through my whole life with the pain of that? No, I'm going to evolve beyond it. And so here I am dying of this bone infection because it was in my upper jaw. And I was like, ah, hell no, we're going to get through this, even though I'm a little worried that I'm not, but we're going to do it. And we're not going to be limited. We're not going to, and I really had a chance to look at my life and go, okay, where am I settling for? Where am I doing the less than thing? Because clearly there's a lot of that manifesting. And I think it's old.
Right.
And I think I need to let it go. I think I'm going to have the surgery, get a lot of it physically out, but then I'm going to go through and we're going to release and look at everything that we've been scared to do and do it.
Mm.
And I just knew that was a healing I needed to do for myself, and I'm still doing it. And holy cow, did that ever start a,
you know. Yeah.
Those are not light decisions that you make in your life. So yeah, I have long answers.
No, and I love it. And thank you so much for sharing that. I think people need to hear that. And I think it's interesting you brought up, and I forget exactly how you phrased it, but you almost feel like you were placed in the wrong family. And I think a lot of us who are kind of on this path and talk a lot about spirituality and the divine breadcrumbs that got us from here to there, we relate to that. Yeah. Because yeah, it does seem to be a common thread.
Totally. And I mean, I know, like for me, my family wasn't so horrible. I mean, at least I felt like it was when I was younger, but you know, at least I knew my family loved me. Mm-hmm. I just felt like they just didn't get me at all. They were trying to form me to these other ideas. But the worst part of it for me was that when I was young, I could still communicate and see on the other side of the veil.
Mm.
And that it was a lot nicer there. And I really hated being on the planet. It was just the physical realm and all the rules and all the things that went with it were just like, why did I decide to come here? This is hideous.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. And I think you had said in your video that the horseback riding is one of the things that helped keep you on the ground because you could kind of flying off.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Horses were my lower body, were my legs. And you know, in the grounding, focusing in the Eastern, you know, realms that I learned all this stuff in, the energies, the subtle body energies of the lower body, the legs, the abdominal area is your sense of I am enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it relates to voice because a voice that is open and resonant and stuff is connected to this part of the body physically because of your breathing. But on an energetic level, you can hear it in a voice because it's more powerful. It's more resonant. It conveys this sense of connection with your higher self and I'm enough and all that kind of thing. And then your legs are the energy of moving forward, you know, we're going to get from here to there and we're going to go. And it's like this real strong, positive, like the roots of a tree, but they're your own roots. They don't go into the earth. The earth is a little troubled right now. So, you know, you ground into yourself because you're your own little powerhouse. So you, the whole lower body, I was missing. So horses were that. Yeah. When I was younger.
Mm. Love it.
Amazing. And great that at a young age, you could sort of figure that out.
Yeah, it was strange. Like, yeah, I was a strange child.
So do you still have visions?
Actually, they've started coming back, yeah. They went away for a long time, which was part of my depression because I'm like, oh, geez, now I'm not only here, I'm cut off.
Yeah, exactly.
And I clearly don't have the tools. Where's the goddamn rule book? Pardon my language. But I was frustrated without a manual. And I don't know, things have lifted or become whatever they are so that, yeah, I feel a lot more in touch with that. And I do have visions again. Yep.
To have that experience and help, if you will, or guidance or whatever it is that, it, you know, that it brings to you and does for you.
Yeah. It does wonderful things. It's just at this point, it's interesting because it's a different challenge now because there's the part of me that has that. And then there's the part of me that's engaged in my business and with all the expectations and decisions and you know what that's like. Mm-hmm. So it's always the challenge of how do you put those together without, you know, and engage in both of them and be in and let your, I don't know, more evolved self inform all the rest, mm-hmm. which constantly makes you an outlier,
right?
And constantly makes you vulnerable and have to have courage. And you know, some mornings you wake up not feeling so much like that, but you got to find it.
Yes.
So it's a decision every day.
Yeah, I see that.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised with, my father was very open-minded. So I was raised with, you know, believing in things like reincarnation and all, you know, and just all of that. And, you know, little suburban town in Massachusetts. It wasn't a popular thing.
No, not so much.
The parents want their kids to kind of hang out with.
That's always, yeah.
But that's okay because it was me, you know.
Right. And, you know, thank God you were raised with this is you and it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's to have that as a core piece is really important because then anything else that happens that's hard, you have that as the core operating piece.
Right.
I had friends in a lot of the personal development work that I did whose parents clearly didn't like them, didn't want them.
Mm.
And they were doing their work on themselves, and they were succeeding, but it was a lot harder for them when they didn't have that core piece because they had to build that for themselves.
Right. Yes.
It's possible to do, definitely is possible to do, but it's harder.
Harder, absolutely.
And you know, that's your personal path. It's like a lot of people will say, oh, it's harder, and they'll carry that like a, you know, like a flaming staff of, you know, oh, I have more pain than you. It's like, okay.
You're right.
All right, you have more pain than me. You win.
Yeah.
Like then what? You know, so you still have to get up every day and decide. You know, do you want to carry that flaming pain or do you want to find a way to heal and move on? And thank God I had incredible teachers and counselors along the way who helped me tremendously. Up here in Tahoe, there's a counselor whose name is Jeff Brandenburg, G-E-O-F-F. He's amazing. He helped me tremendously because he's able to work kind of both sides of the equation, which not all counselors can do.
Right. Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So I'm keeping an eye on the time here. I just have one last question. You've traveled to so many magical places.
Mm-hmm.
Where is somewhere you haven't been but would love to shoot?
Oh my God. That's good. Well, there's so many. Okay. So this year I got to go to the Dolomites. That was one. And so that was accomplished. Last October, I got to go to Slovenia because that was one. Even though, you know, there's parts of Italy that I really want to photograph and I want to go to the Alps too.
Mm.
There's just a lot of that territory in Europe that are just calling to me. I don't know why. Next year, we're working on a retreat in Tuscany, basically, so that we can do not as strong of an adventure as the Dolomites were, because that was a lot of climbing and a lot of hiking. But this would be hiking, but a little tamer. But and then, of course, there's always incredible food and wine and you know, incredible lodging and accommodations that go with all this, because you know, we're not going to suffer that much. I make a joke of it, but really, I think the soul wakes up and the creative muse wants to play when everything just feels magical and you feel taken care of in a way that you're not normally.
Yeah.
And there might be those one or two really early, stinking early mornings where you got to get up for a sunset or sunrise, but not every day. And then you're treated to wonderful things. Anyway, so Tuscany, there's parts of Tuscany and then, and the Alps. And I'm trying to think. I want to go back to New Zealand. I was there once, but I've evolved a lot and I would like to see it again with new eyes. Because New Zealand is another,
that's the place.
Oh,
I have to imagine. But I'd love to go.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just a real mountain person. So I tend to, when people ask me that question, I'm always like, I immediately go into mountain, you know, seeking mode. Because I love mountains.
Yeah, they're pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I call, you know, I just moved out of the mountains in the Tahoe region last year after being here for almost 30 years.
Wow.
I'm still in the Tahoe region. I'm just down on the flats more. And it was one of the hardest thing was physically leaving what I call my mountains.
Right? Yeah.
But I had a lot of communication with them and it was like, all right, it's the next phase. Okay.
And you can visit.
Yes.
Exactly. It's not really that far. I just went hiking there over the weekend and it really did feel like coming home. So it was really nice.
Oh, that's nice. You have friends waiting for you whenever you want.
I know.
Oh, that's great. Well, Karen, thank you so much for spending time with us. I feel like we've barely scratched the surface, so we'll have to have you back on.
That would be fun.
Yes, absolutely.
This is our intro. This is our like, hi, how are you doing? Who are you?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely agree. Well, everybody, go check out Karen's work, karenhutton.com, and we'll put the rest of her contact information in the show notes. But the work is spectacular. It's the colors and the motion and the textures and the stories. Just take your breath away and you can get lost, just sort of, you know, wallowing in them. Wallowing might not be the right word, but just sort of living in them. And it's a wonderful experience. And for those of you photographers out there, I would check out her workshop out in California in October. I think it's going to be magnificent.
Well, thank you for all of that. It is my intention that in my work, people can experience, I don't know, just a little slice of the divine just by spending some time with them. So in that sense, you know, you try to make a difference wherever you can. And if my work makes people feel a little more hopeful or a little more full of light or whatever, then I feel like I've been successful.
Absolutely. Well, you're definitely successful. It's beautiful, beautiful work.
Thank you.
So thank you again. And everybody listening, as always, you can catch the show on thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. And if you like the show, please share it with your friends, subscribe, drop us a review, send us an email, let us know what's going on and what you think and what you want to hear about. We love hearing from all of you.
I love the work you're doing in the world, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Thanks again, Karen, for joining us. And everybody, we will see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.